Hey guys, welcome to the Filming with Josh podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Milligan, and this is episode number 110, The Current State of the Video Industry.
This is the Filming with Josh podcast, brought to you by Rustic River Media. Welcome to the videographer's home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks.
Thanks for listening in to another episode of the Filming with Josh podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Milligan, and this is the Filming with Josh podcast, your home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks. Here on the Filming with Josh podcast, we talk about all things video, from script writing and storyboarding to how to price your work. We talk about it all on this podcast. We also have a Facebook group called Filming with Josh, so be sure to go over to Facebook, type in Filming with Josh, and ask to join the group today. The Filming with Josh Facebook group is a private group where you can come, share your work, ask for feedback, post questions, and keep up with things that are going on in the industry. I would love to see you all there. If you are watching this on YouTube, just note that we are available on all of the major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, etc. And if you are listening on one of those platforms, just know that we are available also on YouTube if for some odd reason you'd rather watch me talk instead. Today's episode is all about the current state of the video industry. And this is purely subjective and is my opinion only, but it's going to come from a place of experience on what I have seen over the last a little over a decade. So since I got in the industry, I got in back in 2000. I started dabbling in video and started filming in like 2010, so like 14 years ago. And I started filming for pay in like 2012, 2013, somewhere around there. So I have been shooting professionally for over a decade, somewhere around like 12-ish years. And I've done a lot of work in a lot of industries. Now, I haven't worked in every industry, and I don't work on Hollywood film sets, and I'm not shooting broadcast television every single day or anything like that, although I have shot some broadcast television. But most of my work today is going to be commercial work, corporate work. I do a lot of marketing for AEC firms, different colleges. I work a lot in the medical industry, and then I also do some short film projects and a lot of live streams or event coverage. So I've got a kind of a wide net, and I've worked in a wide range of industries. And what that wide net has allowed me to see is how much things have changed and what shifts are happening in the video industry. I've had three different types of jobs in this industry. I've worked as a full-time employee for a production company for a television show. I have worked as a freelancer. And then about 9 years ago, I started Rustic River Media, my video production company, and have been running that business ever since. So I've seen the industry from the point of view as a freelancer or contractor, as a company owner, and as an employee. And again, I've worked in a wide range of markets within the video industry. So as a result, I feel like when I talk about the change in the industry, it's coming from those perspectives and what I've seen from those perspectives, from when I got started to where I am today. And there's a lot happening. Things have changed a lot. You know, years and years ago, decades ago, it was very hard to get in this industry, especially if you didn't have any sort of formal training or education. Now it's way easier to get in. I mean, it's so easy. I mean, if you think about it, cameras used to cost six figures. You can go buy a fully kitted FX3 for under $2,000 from Sony today and have a pretty great little camera that shoots some pretty exceptional video. I mean, there's better cameras in the market in terms of like ergonomics and form factor and capabilities. But the point is that you could buy a camera like the FX30 today for under $2,000. And, you know, that doesn't include obviously lenses and accessories, but you can get a camera that is so cheap that it costs what taxes on a camera would cost decades ago, yet they perform exceptionally well. Same is true with pretty much all video gear. I mean, take lighting. Lighting has evolved so much. Aperture is a great example. They have offered affordable lighting that is great in quality today, where you're starting to see their products being used by pretty major production companies for some pretty big projects. I mean, there's been Super Bowl ads shot and lit by Aperture lights, and these lights are very affordable. I mean, you can buy a 600D for like under $1,500 now, which is crazy. And those are exceptional lights that output quite a bit of wattage, especially for commercial work. And of course, they've got the 1200Ds, and now they've gone even bigger than that. And even those aren't very expensive, and they're lighter in weight, so you don't have to have as big of a stand, making them easier to work with on smaller with smaller crews or smaller budgets. And years ago, that wasn't the case. To have that kind of output or that kind of quality of light would require you to step into something really big and heavy and really expensive. You'd have to have a grip team there to be able to set it all up. But I can throw two. I mean, I've got to shoot tomorrow. I'm throwing two Novas and two 600Ds in my truck, and I'm driving them to a shoot myself tomorrow. And I'm gonna be able to light the shoot myself, which is kind of what I'm going to get to in this podcast. But the point is things have changed drastically over the last decade or two, and it's only going to continue to change. And as products have come down in price, quality has gone up, and there's a lot more formal education or non-formal education rather that you can find online on places like YouTube, or even if you're willing to do some deep diving on forums or ask questions on social platforms, like you can find answers today that used to, you would need some sort of formal education to, or some sort of apprenticeship to get those kind of questions answered. And so as a result, being able to learn the craft is easier than ever, not to mention you can afford the gear now. And so it makes the barrier of entry much, much, much lower for people who want to do video for a living. Plus, obviously you have the mega giant that is YouTube, and of course all the other social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, etc., that are tapping in and harnessing the power of video and video marketing. And as a result, there's a higher need than ever for video. And so not only is there more people wanting to do it, but there's more people who want to have it. So it's an interesting shift that is so different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And what has created is it has started to change expectations of clients. Now, again, I don't work on movie sets, okay? So I'm not speaking to that. But if you look at the commercial world, if you look at the corporate world, projects are being shot on smaller and smaller crews than ever. I mean, tomorrow I'm leaving for a shoot in Austin, and then I'm going from there to Dallas for the same client. This is a huge company. I've done a lot of work for them for the last 4 years or so, but they're a big, big company. Yet on this project that I'm going to be shooting this week for the next like 3 days, it's going to be shot by myself. It's a two camera shoot. We're doing a bunch of interviews, and everything is going to be shot on two cameras, and I'm going to run a boom by myself with a lav as a backup, and I'm going to do my own lighting. Now, would I love to crew up and bring a sound mixer or location sound recorders? Of course. Would I love to bring one or two or three people to help handle all the lighting? Sure. Would I love to have another camera operator? Yes, I would. But for this particular project, it's just not feasible within the budget. And so as a result, it's kind of a take it or leave it situation. Do I do the job or do I turn it down and give it to somebody else? I'm not going to turn it down. I've got a wife and kids that I've got to feed. And this has been a longstanding client of mine. And there's still like, I'm going to make good money on this project. My personal rate for this project is really great. But there's no rate left to hire anyone else. And that's because the expectation of the client is that they can get more with less today. And that expectation has been created because of this shift we see in the market. I mean, a job like this 15 years ago, you would need all those people. You would need probably two different people to run the A and the B cam if you want to do it, you know, well. You might even want a first AC to manage focus. You'd probably have someone directing the interviews. You'd have, you know, a designated person or multiple people to handle all the lighting, and you'd have someone handling the sound. This would be a crewed up project that would cost substantially more than what I'm able to make off of this shoot this week. And again, it's not that this is a necessarily like a low budget shoot, like I'm not making anything. Like I'm gonna make great money on it, but there's just no money left for anybody else. And so now I'm having to do more work because I'm having to do all my own sound and my own lighting and all my own camera work. And the gear does make this possible, right? Because I'm gonna shoot this with an FX6 and FX3. As an A and a B, I'm going to have external small HD monitors on both so I can kind of pay attention to what's going on with the focus and exposure. But the cameras are going to be pulling some of the weight for me. I don't need a first AC. I can run Sony G Master lenses and they can pull focus for me. Eye autofocus and face detection autofocus on these cameras is incredible. And I've been using them with G Master lenses for interviews for years now. And they never miss focus. I say that and watch tomorrow. It's going to miss focus. And I am paying attention, of course, but they never miss focus. So like I can, so long as I set up my focus correctly and I make sure there's no breathing in my lenses going on or anything, so I don't see any micro adjustments happening, I know I'm going to come home with great results. So I just eliminated the need for a first AC or even the need for another camera op for this job, right? And again, in a perfect world, I'd have another camera op, but the budget's not there. And I technically don't have to have that person, even though I'd like to have that person. And I often do have that person. I don't need it tomorrow. I can pull it off with these two cameras on my own because they'll do all the focusing for me. And I can just pay attention to the exposure and make sure everything looks fine. And that's it. And framing and stuff like that, of course. But the cameras are doing a lot of the work for me. That's eliminating a job. Same is true with the audio, right? I would love to have a sound recordist there. However, I know that for this project and where the project is going, which is going to be for an online marketing campaign, I can simply run a boom mic hardwired into my FX6 via an XLR cable and can monitor that myself just to make sure the levels are good and that there's nothing wrong with the reverb in the room. I can pick the right mic. You know, I'm going to pick based on the room situation, whether I want to go with a cardioid, super cardioid, or shotgun mic. Not everybody I understand has that. But if you've invested in those kind of mics and you know, have learned some basic audio, you can do this yourself. So I can run a boom on a C-stand and can run whatever mic I choose based on the sound of the room. I can run that mic hardwired into my camera and the preamps are just fine for this, where it's going to be going and where it's going to be playing. So I can monitor that myself. And then I can even hide a lav using like Bumblebee products underneath clothing and can run that as a backup source that I could either mix together in post or pick based on if I like one over the other sound wise in post. But I can easily run a second mic, whether that's a wireless mic, wirelessly ran, or whether I want to run it to something like a Tentacle Sync Track E, and just listen to the sound when I first mic them up and then let it run into a recorder at 32-bit float. That's an option. So there's a lot of options there to be able to do your own sound. Yes, having a location sound recordist or sound mixer there would be very useful. But technically I can do it by myself, so I can do it. The equipment has evolved enough where that's a job I can do myself. Even timecode, right? Like I can run timecode via Tentacle Syncs in both my FX6 and my FX3 and have perfectly synced timecode in post, and like everything synced up when I get home and resolve. I mean, it's just a click of a button. I mean, all of that has changed so much that I can do that by myself. And then again, the lighting, like so long as the client gives me, you know, 1 to 2 hours to set up for each interview or each area that we're going to go to film an interview, I can make it look nice. You know, I can set up my Novas or my 600Ds, my 60Xs, 300Ds, you know, whatever lights I bring, I can set those up based on the room and the situation. I've got flags and I've got my own stands and I can do all that myself. Again, I'd prefer to have one or two or more people to do that for me, but I can do it and it'll look fine. Will it look as good as if I had like a designated person doing it and handling that for me while I focus on something else? Probably not. But is it going to still look good? Yeah, I've done shoots like this all the time for this client and it looks really good. And the client's happy with the end results. I'm happy with the end results. I think it's perfectly sufficient for where it's going. So my point is that I'm going on the shoot tomorrow where I'm doing my own lighting. I'm doing my own sound. I'm doing my own camera work, my own focusing, and I'm going to be working with the client to pay attention to how the interview is being conducted and helping them and give direction and stuff to the client to the interviewee. I'm going to be able to assist in that and pay attention to that because even though I'm paying attention to my cameras, I got autofocus nailing focus for me. So as long as framing exposure is good and everything sounds good, I can help with directing the interviews as well. So yes, it's a lot of hats, but you can do it. And the thing is that, again, I would rather not do that, but this is starting to become the norm in a lot of commercial and corporate work where people are having to shoot projects either by themselves or they're bringing in what I like to call skeleton crews, where you might have maybe a PA, production assistant, or a PA plus maybe a sound mixer, and then the three of you guys just kind of wear a few different hats and kind of help each other out a little bit. And maybe the PA helps set up lights and helps move gear around, but then he also goes behind a camera for me. Sometimes I'll do that, but that's still a skeleton crew of two or three people. But this is becoming really common, and not every commercial or corporate job is shot by that, by people out there, or even myself. It depends on the budget, but you're seeing this happen more and more and more today. And the reason is because companies are starting to learn that there are more affordable pricing to video or more affordable prices to video out there for people who are able to work on smaller crews, thus forcing people like me to now have to work with smaller crews. And so it's just shifting. The market is shifting. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you have newer guys getting into video who are not formally trained, who are learning stuff online. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they're learning stuff online. They're picking up stuff here or there, and then they're offering their services for very low prices. And it may not be the same quality as what you might get if you hired a full crew, but people who are learning online and who are buying more affordable gear, like cameras like the FX30 and lights like an Aputure 300D, you know, like these are not very expensive items. And so because people are able to grab that gear at such low prices and kind of learn how to use it, they can offer video to companies at a fraction of the price that it used to cost. And again, it may not be the same quality, but they're starting to get good enough where it's passable. And so larger companies are starting to get to the point where they're like, hey, you know what? Why spend all our money on one video when we can hire someone to do it themselves or with a small crew, and we can just do more videos throughout the year and maybe allocate our budget for more projects rather than one or two or three big ones? And that's what I'm starting to see. Now, I'm still, again, like this shoot tomorrow, this client still spends quite a bit of money with me throughout the year, and they have for the last 3 or 4 years, but it's spread out. You know, they're not dropping $100,000 on any single video project. We're just spreading the money out onto numerous projects. And instead of one big project where I bring a crew, I just handle these projects with myself or with a skeleton crew. And that is becoming very, very common. So I'm seeing a giant shift in the industry where people are learning to do more things. People are learning to do sound in addition to camera work, and are learning to do lighting in addition to camera work and sound, and are learning to get into directing a little bit, and are starting to learn how to wear many hats. And as a result, it helps them to be able to pick up work because they can offer it at a cheaper price, thus forcing everyone else to have to start coming down in price. So that's kind of one part of the industry that is shifting that I'm seeing. I'm in several groups online where that are location sound groups or groups for people who go and record audio for TV or film. And you can see the frustration with sound guys who are frustrated because people like me are doing what I just described. I'm doing this shoot this week where I'm doing my own sound. I mean, used to, you would hire someone like that, and you still do often, but just not as much. I mean, there are so many jobs that someone like myself can do on their own now. You know, I've got some great mics. I've got Sennheiser MKH 80s, 60s, 50s, and 40s, and I've got a bunch of Sanken Kaz 11Ds, and I've got some nice sound recorders and stuff. So I can do it myself if I need to. And more often than not these days, I'm doing it myself. And I understand why sound guys are starting to get frustrated. It's because they're getting pushed out of certain markets because people don't hire them anymore. They just do the sound themselves. And it's unfortunate. And I get why they're frustrated. But I also understand from a client's perspective, like, hey, you can do it. and I hate that, but I mean, it's true. It's true, you know? Like, you don't need to bring, used to, like when gimbals first came out, I'll never forget when FreeFly first came out with the Movi, I bought a Movi M5, like right after FreeFly launched the M5, M10, and M15 line. I bought an M5 and I was like, bro, like I'm gonna be a gimbal operator in my area and I'm gonna market that to everyone. And I was an early adopter. I was like the only person I knew had a Movi at the time. So I bought an M5. You know, back then, even the M5, which was like Movi's smallest gimbal, was still like $5,000 for the kit if you got the whole kit with the box, Pelican case, and everything. So I bought an M5 and I was like, I'm going to be a gimbal operator. But nowadays, you know, you can go and buy, I mean, the DJI RS4 Pro came out today. You could go buy an RS4 Pro combo kit with like a focusing motor for like $1,100 and it's a great gimbal and it's tiny, And so anybody wants gimbal shots can just buy one of those for $1,100 and learn how to balance it, get comfortable with the catwalk, get comfortable with the movements, and then throw a tiny little gimbal case in their truck and now offer gimbal shots. So like my whole big plan years ago of buying the Movi back in like 2014 or 15, whenever it was I bought it, you know, I guess it was 10 years ago now. My whole plan of like buying that and like marketing myself as a gimbal operator, like it never panned out because everything shifted so fast. I mean, DJI came out with the Ronin and Ronin M and stuff, and they weren't near as good as the Movi, but they've gotten better and better and better. Now they're fantastic and they cost a fraction of the price and anybody can buy one and start offering gimbal work and learn how to use it really easily. Same with drones, right? I personally run a Mavic 3 Cine, and it, you know, it's a great drone. And in fact, I don't even feel like I have to have the Cine version. I have it because I like shooting to ProRes when I can, because it's just great to work with. But really, honestly, I could run a straight up Mavic 3 Pro, and you know, what does that cost? Like $2,500, $3,000 for the kit, whatever it is. Like that's very cheap, and it shoots incredible video, and packs up tiny, and you could throw it in your truck, go get your Part 107 license, and now you're a drone operator, licensed drone operator. You know, I remember when drones first came out, you had basically these heavy lifting drones by companies like DJI, like the Matrice, or however it is you pronounce it. You know, they had like that line, and then you had Free Fly with like their Alta line. And then from there you had like the Phantom 4 like the original Phantom, where you flew like a GoPro. So you either were like a prosumer who bought a drone, or if you were serious about it, you'd have to hire a dedicated drone operator. But now if someone wants pretty decent quality drone shots, you can go out and buy a Mavic 3 Pro for $2,500, $2,000, $1,500, I don't remember, whatever the price is. It's not very much money. Get your Part 107 and now you can offer drone shots. You know, you don't have to have a heavy lifting drone that costs $10,000, $15,000, $20,000+ plus the camera that you're putting on it. And you can be up and get your shots in seconds and then land it. Now, of course, you want to change focal lengths and stuff. You might still have to go with something like an Inspire 3 or go with something like an Alta. But for a lot of work, you just don't have to. If you just need like an establishing drone shot, you can take a Mavic 3 Pro and go get it. So for a lot of people who start offering drone services, that market shifted a lot, right? So just things have changed so much. And so from smaller crews and smaller budgets to faster turnaround times, that's another thing I'm seeing, right? So companies like this company I'm working with tomorrow, we're shooting over the course of the next few days, we're shooting a bunch of interviews, and they need that within like the next 2 to 3 weeks. And they're a large client, so I can't afford not to give them what they need. So I'm gonna take the time and get them their product quickly. But that's the expectation today, right? Like fast turnaround products, because people are wanting to get stuff in and get it out. But they still want it to look and sound good. So they still have high expectations, but they want to do it with smaller crews and they want it tomorrow. And that's just what you're seeing today. So it's just shifting so much because people are consuming it so fast that they just, once they consumed it, they're ready for the next thing. So you got to be constantly giving them the next thing. So it's just interesting how much the market has shifted, and you got to really stay on top of that. Now we have, you know, AI coming out. You know, unless you're living under a rock, you've heard of the new ChatGPT product. I think it's called like Sora or something like that. And that is kind of scary good. It's very good to the point where if you're looking for a shot for your project, you have a project, you need a shot. Let's take the solar eclipse that happened yesterday. Okay, let's just say you want a solar eclipse shot in some project you're working on. Used to, you'd have to hire someone or maybe multiple someones to go out and chase that shot and to pay plane tickets to go wherever they needed to go to get into position to get that shot. So that's a fortune, right? You're paying for plane tickets and you're paying for mileage and baggage fees and hotel expense and meals to send people to wherever destination they need to go to capture that shot for whatever project it is that you're working on. But with this new ChatGPT Sora or whatever it's called coming out, you could go online in like 10 minutes and create that shot. And is it going to be the same quality? Maybe not, but to be honest with you, some of the early beta videos that have come out are freaking good, scary good, to the point where if you told me that they were shot by someone, I would believe it. Like they look great. And the thing is this is just the beginning. They just started releasing the initial beta videos for this. So it's going to get so much better over the course of the next several years. So what that means is that jobs like, hey, I need you to go capture that, you know, solar eclipse for this project I'm working on, some of those jobs are going to get eliminated. Now, there's still a need for some of that to be captured. You know, if you work for an organization like National Geographic, maybe that you're wanting to capture the real life, solar eclipse, because almost like you're documenting something. And so you want to capture the real event and document it as it happened. But if you're just working on like a passion project or a short film or a commercial shoot, why pay for that when you can replicate it in ChatGPT, Sora, or whatever for pennies on the dollar? You know what I mean? And so you're going to start to see more and more of that. It's going to affect a lot of B-roll capturing scenarios, or scenarios where people need footage of a location because they can just recreate a lot of it. I don't think it's going to affect every market. Like, for instance, I'm not in the wedding industry, but I have many friends who are. And if you're in the wedding industry and you film weddings for a living, I don't think this is going to replicate or take away from your work, because you can't replicate a wedding that took place in real life with AI. You know, AI can't like take the real bride and the real groom and show the real wedding. So it's not going to eliminate that job, right? I think for a lot of documentary work, it won't eliminate that either. And now I do think it will affect it. You know, you see, if you ever watch a good documentary where maybe they like show a scene that on how they think something happened in history, and they might have to pay actors and rent a location and have props and makeup artists and all this stuff to recreate what they envisioned happened something that happened in history. Now I see where that could be created through AI. So I do think it won't completely like eliminate documentary or anything, because documentary is literally you're documenting real world stuff. I don't think that's going to be eliminated, but I think some of the like recreates in documentary, they might be eliminated or at least severely affected. I think you're going to see it not really affect interviews. I think that's a safe place to be. I think if you're working for a company and you're a marketing person and you're wanting interviews for the company, maybe it's testimonials from customers, maybe it's testimonials from employees, maybe you're wanting to do, you want to hear from the CEO, you want a message from the CEO, those will still be happening no matter what happens with AI, right? Because people, consumers, aren't going to want to hear from an AI-driven CEO or AI-driven customers or AI-driven employees. They're going to want to hear from real people, real stories and real people. And as AI becomes more sophisticated, you're going to see more sophistication on the side of being able to identify AI. You know, YouTube's already kind of starting to do some of this stuff where things can be self-flagged on whether it was created by AI or not. I think that's going to become automated at some point. And so I do think that as consumers, you're not going to want to hear from a fake person. You're going to want to hear from real people, real stories from real people. And so I think that there's always going to be a need for that. And AI can't take away from that, because I think in the future, it's going to be flagged for being AI versus like fake versus real. Now, who gets to decide what's fake and real? I don't know, man. We have a hard enough time in the news identifying what's real and fake. So I don't know how that's going to shake out. And there's obviously going to be some cases where things are incorrectly labeled or whatnot. But I do think that there's always going to be a need for interviews and interview-driven videos. There's always going to be a need for wedding videography. There's always going to be a need for documentary. But if you're in the commercial world and you're needing B-roll shots of someone in a classroom or someone, you know, walking in a park holding a cup of coffee with a girl, like a guy and a girl, and you just need a B-roll shot of that, you know, you don't even have to go buy stock. I think eventually you'll just be able to create that with AI. So I think that's going to also create a big rift in the industry, where you're going to see some jobs being eliminated, maybe many jobs being eliminated, or at least financially affected through AI. And that's sad, honestly. I hate that. I can't stand the thought of that, but it's coming. So what do you do then? Like, with these changes, what do? You have budgets coming down, getting smaller and smaller, people wanting to do more and more work, but at a faster pace with smaller crews, or even just people doing stuff by themselves. You've got AI eliminating certain jobs, right? What do you do? Well, I think it just all comes down to how you respond to that. What are you willing to take advantage of, and what kind of jobs are you willing to put most of your work into? For me, I think most of my work is pretty safe because I do a lot of commercial corporate work where a lot of my work is interview driven. A lot of times interviews only, it's just pure interviews. Everything I'm shooting this week is pure interviews, multicam interviews. There's no B-roll or anything. Shoots like this are going nowhere. So I think that's safe. And I do a lot of stuff like this, or it might be interviews with B-roll. And I think a lot of the B-roll I shoot for companies, some of it maybe could be created through AI, but a lot of it is having to capture like real people using real products or real people going out and conducting real services. So I think there's, you know, a safety net there for the most part. Some of it could be affected, but I do think that for the most part, interview-driven content and corporate B-roll or commercial B-roll driven content, a lot of that is going to be protected to an extent. Again, if you're in documentary, I think that's relatively safe. If you're in weddings, that's relatively safe. So I think focusing on markets that are going to be less affected by AI is smart. I also think focusing on markets that are going to be less affected by budget constraints is smart. There are a lot of smaller businesses that can't afford to work with me. And I don't mean that in a mean or aggressive way, but it's just the truth, right? Like I've invested a lot of money into my equipment. I've spent a lot of time learning what I've learned. And so I've got a lot invested here. So it cost money for me to go out and perform these services. So there are certain level of projects that I need a minimum amount to be able to take on. And there are a lot of small businesses today that just don't want to spend that much money on video marketing anymore. So I've already priced myself out of many categories of small business marketing videos. And so I think if you're getting into this industry, or if you are in this industry, I think if you want to stay consistent, you need to continue to move toward working with larger companies or bigger brands that you can build a relationship with and grow with. Because these smaller and smaller and smaller businesses that you work with, they're going to start eliminating their video budgets or making them smaller, 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 because they're going to learn that they can just hire some college kid down the street to do a video form for $500. And I hate to say that, but it's true. So that's why I feel like I've priced myself out of certain categories of work, because they're learning that they can find some young guy who can go out, or girl who can go out and buy an FX30 and a 24 to 70 lens for a couple thousand dollars or $3,000, and buy a cheap $500 gimbal and an aperture 300D with a light stand, and they can go out and shoot a halfway decent video for $500. And so I think that smaller businesses are getting a taste of that, and have been getting a taste of that for a while. And as a result, many of them, you're just no longer going to be able to do work for. You're going to be cutting them out of your market because they just can't afford you. Because if you do this for a living, like, you got to be able to make a decent amount to do this for a living, right? Especially if you're self-employed, right? Because you got to pay for, assuming that, you know, your spouse isn't bringing home, isn't the breadwinner and isn't bringing home insurance. Like in my household, my wife stays home with the kids. And so I have to provide health insurance and, for the whole family. And, I am the sole provider. So I have to make the income to cover everybody here, you know, me, my wife, my two kids. I got to be able to feed all of us. I got to pay for all of our health insurance, pay for mortgage, pay for everything. So I have to make a certain amount of money to do this, you know, and to pay for all this equipment and all this experience that I've learned. So I have to price my work at a certain point, which just eliminates a certain sector of the market. So if you're serious about this, as you grow in your career, that's what you're going to experience. You're going to just price yourself out of that lower end of the market. And so I think you should just anticipate that that's going to happen to you, and just keep focusing on how do I get bigger clients that I can work with longer term, and who can at least, even if they don't want to pay for a fully crewed up job, will at least pay for me to come and do the project. So I think pivoting in your career, like pivoting and focusing on industries that are going to be less affected by things like AI, and working on projects with clients that are more likely to hire you for continued business, I think those are two things that you should focus on, and try your best to focus on working with brands that have a little bit more of a budget than these smaller mom and pop businesses. Not trying to take anything away from those businesses, but I just think they're getting gobbled up by the low end, and they just aren't, today a lot of them just aren't going to pay for proper video anymore. And you just got to accept that and move on into working with companies or brands or events that will pay for at least a proper rate for you to come do the job, if nothing else. So focusing on avenues or in marketplaces that are going to be around for the long haul, and focusing on working with bigger companies or bigger brands, I think are really important as you move forward in your career with the way that things are changing. And then just trying to stay ahead of the curve with certain things like AI. Like, I have not really used AI a whole lot. I've used some photographic AI for pitch decks to help generate like an idea I have for like a mood board or for shots when presenting a project to clients. So I have done some of that. Pitched a documentary last year where I did that. But I haven't really dabbled with anything beyond that. And part of that's because like video AI is brand new, right? But I do think that you're going to have to embrace it. I'm going to have to embrace it, unfortunately. So whether I like it or not, and I don't like it, I think I'm going to just have to learn how to take advantage of it. So as you know, as I continue to develop in my career, when I have a shoot where I need a certain type of shot, but I know the client doesn't have the budget for it, I'm going to have to just accept AI and learn how to utilize it. And I think those who learn how to utilize it will be more successful than those who push it off and say, nah, I'm not touching that. So unfortunately, I think, you know, whether you want to or not, you need to learn to utilize it in your work, find ways to accept it, to be able to work with it, and make it to where you can take advantage of it and use it to help you produce a better product for your client. You may not want that. You may would rather send a crew out to go film that solar eclipse for your project, but you just got to accept the fact that some clients and companies, many of them aren't going to do that anymore moving forward. And you just have to embrace it and work with what you're given. And you might have to learn how to take on more roles. You know, if you're a location sound mixer and you feel like you're struggling right now because people like me have cut you out of work, I hate that. But I think you got to accept it. And if you want to stay in the video business at all, you might want to learn how to run a camera too. And I hate that, but that's just where the market's headed. If you know how to run a camera and you're a camera operator, but you're struggling to make ends meet, might be time to learn how to do some sound and do some lighting so you can do some of the, you know, offer some of those things beyond just your camera work, or be able to take on jobs where you can do multiple roles. I think those are things that are going to be really important moving forward. Don't just be like, oh, I'm only going to be a director. That's all I'm ever going to do. Because I think if that's you, one day you may find yourself kind of starving and struggling to pay your bills. So you might want to learn some of the other parts of the industry and get skilled in those areas so that you can do what I'm doing tomorrow and go take on a project where you can wear many hats at once, because at least you're getting hired and you're still in the industry. So I just think that these are some of the changes that I see, like it or not. I think some markets that are going to be affected that I haven't mentioned yet is like real estate. I hate the real estate market. I'm just going to say that. I don't really do anything in real estate. I've done a little bit in the past. Most of the real estate that I've done has been like marketing big ranches that are going for sale. And I like doing that because normally I get paid to come out and stay at the ranch for several days and film the ranch and maybe do a story on it. That is awesome. But when it comes to like doing like residential real estate, I don't touch any of that stuff. I can't stand it. I've done a few residential real estate photo or video shoots in the past. And I did not like it, because I feel like the agents, their expectations just do not meet their budgets, in my opinion. And I don't want nothing to do with that. But I am in some of these real estate video and photo groups on Facebook, and I do see some of the scenarios that people run into, and it is wild. Thus further confirming why I don't want to be in that industry. But I think those industries are going to be affected because, again, agents, real estate agents, and again, I'm not in this industry, but this is just what I see. But real estate agents are expecting videos for almost every home. Videos, photos, walkthroughs, all this stuff for almost every home that they get. And they need it like the day after they get the listing. It's nuts. And beyond that, they expect them to be pretty good. Like, they expect you to show up with a drone and be licensed, which of course you need to be either way, but show up with a drone, get aerial photos, aerial video, get inside the house, get tons of gimbal shots, you know, put together a TikTok video, put together a video that's for Facebook and Instagram or whatever, the MLS listings or whatever those things are called. And like, they want all this content, they want it to be good, and they want it tomorrow, and they want it for like $500. You know, it's insane. But that's what I'm seeing. Some of them are like, hey, I need you to stay late and get a nighttime shot. Like, what? You know, this isn't a documentary on the home. Like, what are we doing here? But that's what I see. And now now that like there's a lot of AI driven like video editing apps and stuff coming out, I think some of that market's going to be affected. It's already been affected a lot, where they're expecting a lot of work for a very small price and in a very short turnaround. But what I think is going to happen is I think some of these realtors are going to get to the point where they can take their new, you know, Google phones or whatever. You know, some of these phones have got pretty good video now that do some like AI driven things to make the footage look halfway decent. I think they're going to go and just like walk through the homes with their phones, or maybe their phones on a phone gimbal. And then they'll just like use a video editing app to auto cut together a video for them. And that's crazy and scary, but I do think that's going to happen. I see a podcast too. People, like I do this podcast, I edit this manually myself, but I know people who do podcasts and they have it edited via AI. And I have been hired in the past to edit podcasts, audio or video podcasts, but I think some of those jobs may go away because people can just use AI-driven editing to edit podcasts and video. Will it be the same as a human doing it? Probably not, but still, like if it's cheap or free or whatever, like if you're someone who's trying to figure out where you want to spend your money on marketing, why not just do it for free or for, you know, the price of an app or something? So I think that that's going to be affected too. I think also if you're not already offering, if you do video for a living, but you're not offering photography, that's a mistake. You need to offer photography unless you can fully stay away from it and you're doing just fine. But I will say I was adamantly against photography being a big part of my business for years. But about like 4 or 5 years ago, I started to just embrace the fact that customers wanted photography. And fortunately, that was a smart move that I made because it has landed me more work I probably would not have gotten had I not have been willing to do photography. Reason being is there are a lot of companies, like I have a shoot coming up in a few weeks where this organization, they want to do a photo video shoot. And I'm not going to personally do the photography. I have a photographer that I bring out for shoots like this. But still, like, I wouldn't have gotten the job otherwise. If I wasn't willing to offer photography in addition to my video services, there's no way I would have landed this job because they were wanting to write one check to one company who can handle both things. And part of the reason they want that is not just writing one check, but they just wanted to like deal with one contact. And they wanted things to look and feel consistent between the stills and the video, which I mean, I understand. And they want to kill two birds with one stone. We're going to set aside, you know, whatever, however many days the shoot is, but we want to do stills and video. Now, I personally do not like shooting stills by myself when also on a video job. Like, to me, I still want that to be handled separately. So either I tell the client, we need to book extra time or an extra day to do the stills. You know, maybe if you're paying me to fly out to South Carolina for a shoot, but you also want to do photos, we need to stay an extra day to do the photos because it's too hard to bounce back and forth between the two. Or what I usually do is I will bring a photographer out and I'll pay the photographer a day rate to shoot the stills with me. So I'll step in, I will set up all the lighting, and then I'll step in and get my video shots. Maybe it's a commercial or corporate shoot. And then when I'm done, they'll step in and get their photo shots. And then we'll just do that back and forth until the project's done. And then they hand me the raw files. I cut them a check. And then my team, we edit those files. But if I wasn't offering that, there's many jobs I just flat out wouldn't have gotten. And there's jobs that clients I've landed that started as photo clients and then transitioned to video. So I do think it's important that you embrace photography because today people are expecting a service that can provide both or a company that can provide both. So even though I was adamantly against it for years, I'm not anymore. I've embraced it and I finally listed it on my website. Not like super well, but it's there. I need a new website. But point is if you go to my website, you'll see that we offer photography now. And I had to just fully embrace that because that was just becoming an expectation. And high volume photos too. This client I'm going to shoot for tomorrow, we're staying an extra day in Dallas to shoot photos because we're flying a bunch of people in for this video shoot. And so while they're all here, let's take advantage and knock out a bunch of content for a photo shoot. And I've been doing a lot of these content photo shoots for this client. They're primarily a video client, but we've been doing a lot of these content photo shoots where we'll stay an extra day or two, or I'll bring a photographer to the video shoot. And we're just building this huge library of photographs online. And it's just one giant library, but you can also divide it up by shoot days. And that way you can go, they can go on and click through all the photos and pick photos that they can use for different marketing campaigns, whether it's print ads, banner ads, social posts, stuff like that. But they want high volume because they need to post stuff every day. And they want it done by the same people who are doing their video work on the same project. So again, you just have to learn, I think, in this market today to embrace that, because I think that's the norm. So my takeaway from this is things are changing. The expectation today is that people will produce a quality product for a fraction of the price that it used to be, with smaller crews, sometimes even by yourself or one person. And you have to just make the decision. Am I willing to do that? Or am I willing to leave the work on the table? And if you're someone like me, you got a business to run, you got bills to pay, and you got wife and kids and home insurance, or mortgage, health insurance, all that stuff. I mean, as long as the rate, you know, as long as it pays the rate I need, you may have to say yes, it just is what it is. I know it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. If you want to stay in business, it is what it is. You got to adapt and you got to accept it. And that's just the world we live in today. And so I think you need to be willing to accept that change for not all the whole market, but for parts of the market. And you should try to strive to focus on working with businesses you can build a long-term relationship with, which may cut out some of the smaller market, but be willing to be okay with that. And then focus on markets that are going to be less affected by AI, things that are like interview-driven, B-roll-driven, maybe event coverage, weddings if you do that, live streaming things, documentary, at least the actual documentary, documenting something side of documentary. I think those things are things that are going to be around for the long haul, and just learn to focus on those areas if you can, and because I think those are safer bets, and then embrace whatever changes come. You know, embrace the better lighting. I've got a whole, you can probably see on my shelf back there, I got a whole bunch of aperture lights. Like, I'm embracing the fact that lighting gear is affordable today, and I can have a bunch of it and have really good lights, and embrace AI. I don't like it, but there are things you can use it for. And if you don't embrace it, your competitor will, and they'll cut you out. So embrace it and use it to your advantage. And those are my tips for being able to navigate through the changes. But make no mistake, the market is changing, and it is changing fast. And it's going to change a lot more in the next 5 to 10 years. Quite frankly, I don't know what to expect. But this is where I think we are today. This is what I've seen in all the markets I work in, and I embrace it. Sometimes I'll hire contractors that'll ask me. They're like old school. They're so focused on, you got to have a different person for each role. And I understand that. But they'll ask me, I get asked this a lot by my contractors, like why don't you have a sound guy here? Why don't you have a designated gimbal operator here? Why don't you have another person running that other camera over there? And the answer is, I would love to, but for this shoot, I just can't. And I still want the job. I can't afford to turn away the job. And that is the industry today, and where I see it moving forward for many people. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. I want to hear your thoughts. Go over to the Filming with Josh group on Facebook, ask to join the group today, and comment there. Let me know your thoughts on this episode. You can also comment on YouTube directly if you are watching on YouTube. And please follow the podcast on either Google. I guess Google's getting rid of the Google podcast. So follow the podcast on like Apple or Spotify, and please rate and subscribe to it. I make no money doing this, fully transparent there. I've never accepted any sponsorships for this, even 110 episodes in. I just do it because I love talking about this industry, and I love sharing things that I see or have learned to other people. And so if you like that, please rate the podcast and let me know, and please subscribe to it so that other people like you can find this podcast too. I'll see you all next week.
To learn more about Rustic River Media, visit us online at rusticriver.media. Thanks for listening to the Filming with Josh podcast. Catch every episode by hitting subscribe today.